Tango Tango Papa 2029, January 4, 2019.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you from, I guess I'm close to Galveston, Texas. Now, I just left Galveston on my way north toward Houston. So I picked a load up in Galveston that was already loaded by a shag driver. They have a small drop yard there, and he loaded it, obviously loaded it there at the at some loading docks. It's a load of bananas. I'm taking it to Tulsa, Oklahoma, to another driver, to our drop yard there, and then it delivers. He delivers it in Kansas City on Monday. Of course, I'm supposed to be home tomorrow. 16th, December 16th, to start my vacation. So should be able to get home tomorrow without too much problem. And so then my vacation time starts. I'll don't go to work again until January the 4th. So I'll spend some time at home. Haven't decided exactly how much yet. And then I'll be heading south to South Texas, down where towards the Rio Grande Valley, where my parents are, and that's where I intend to spend the bulk of the vacation time. So I can't remember what I talked about in the last podcast. I guess I should listen back to it. But in any case, I'm sure I probably at least mentioned that for the past more than 2 weeks, I decided I would drop carbohydrates from my diet. You know, I'm not really going on a diet. I'm not, you know, people keep saying Atkins diet, evil. You know, watch out, you're going to ruin your health, and so on and so forth. And I'm not really on a diet. All I've done is I've decided that, and I already knew this, potatoes, let's see, there's four main things, of course, besides candies and cakes and cookies and all that stuff. You've got potatoes, you've got bread, you've got rice, and you've got pasta. And those are the big four things that we have in our diet. Of course, I just love me some pasta, but it's sugar cubes. Your body metabolizes it. Guess what it turns into? Sugar cubes. So every time I see a bowl of pasta, it's really a bowl of sugar cubes. And you're just putting sauce and maybe some meatballs on top and maybe some cheese. But it's sugar cubes, maybe some other spices. It's sugar cubes. Same way, you know, someone orders a baked potato and they put their butter and sour cream on there. Well, they might as well be putting butter and sour cream on the nutritional equivalent of sugar cubes, because that's what it turns into when it hits your bloodstream, you know. Glucose is glucose. Glucose is sugar when it's inside your blood. So, same way with rice. You eat a big thing of rice. It doesn't matter whether it's cooked, how it's cooked. If it's white rice, brown rice, steamed rice, fried rice, the bulk of it is starch, and it turns into sugar as soon as your body metabolizes it. As soon as it hits the acid in your stomach. It eventually, and it goes through your intestines, it breaks down into, guess what, sugar. So sugar cubes, eat a big thing of bread. Love me some bread too. You know, put big a nice warm sourdough bun with big pad of butter on there. Sugar cubes, might as well be putting butter on butter on sugar cubes. So all I'm doing is I've stopped. In a sense, I've just stopped using sugar. I've taken all of that excess sugar out of my diet. Now I'm still getting a little bit of sugar here and there. You know, you eat vegetables, which I do, and there's some sugar in those. There's probably some sugar in different dressings, salad dressings that you eat. You know, there's a little bit in there as well. Even in some, like some vegetables, like corn, which probably is more of a, I don't know if that's more of a grain. Corn is actually more, belongs to the grain family, I think. But corn, of course, is full of starch or sugar, as well as carrots, lots of sugar. Especially, you cook all the fiber out of it, it's sugar. You know, creamed corn, it's delicious. It's just a bowl of sugar, kind of melted sugar cubes. So I've just kind of cut all that stuff out. All of the blatant stuff that's sugary, that's just basically it's sugar cubes. That's what you're eating when you're bought, because your body turns that into it. And then they're saying, well, you're not going to get the nutrition out of the whatever. And, how much nutrition is in a potato? How much nutrition is in rice? How much nutrition is in pasta? How much nutrition is in bread? Probably not very much. If you're going to rely on getting nutrition out of those things, they're basically like empty sugar calories, you're not going to get your nutrition. So, but it's interesting. It's been, I haven't had to fight with myself, the biggest fight that I had with myself was several days ago. It's been more than a week ago. I was in a Denny's and I ordered whatever it was I ordered, and I forgot to tell them don't bring me any bread, because they'll just automatically bring you these sourdough, in many cases they'll bring you sourdough bread, and I had to fight with myself a little bit. There's a little bit of a temptation to eat it, and in fact I'd almost decided at the end, I was going to leave it, and then I thought about maybe giving it away to somebody else. I was sitting at the bar in Denny's. A lot of times Denny's will have a bar, kind of a bar area you can sit at. You get a little bit faster service typically. So I thought about offering it to somebody else, and then I thought, well, that's probably kind of awkward. So right at the end, I decided, well, I'm going to eat that. And so what I did, I just broke, there was a little piece on there, and I just sort of broke it off and put it in my mouth and started chewing. And then I kind of decided, I really don't want this. I'm not going to do this. Why am I doing this? And I kind of discreetly spit it out into the, this gal gave me plenty of napkins. A lot of times they'll bring me plenty of napkins because I got this big beard now. And I think they think I'm going to probably be messy with it, and I need the napkins. And sometimes I am messy, but I've gotten fairly adept at kind of keeping the food out of my beard. But in any case, I had extra napkins, and so I just sort of discreetly spit the little bite of bread back out into the napkin, didn't swallow it, and that was that. And after that, every time I eat, I just tell them no potatoes, no bread. Don't want any, and they're always pretty good about not bringing it. And even if they did at this point, I would not be tempted to eat it. It's really kind of a poison. You can think, with the American diet in particular, we've all of us that are alive today, or at least least my age, people my, you know, I'm 63, soon be 64 in April. We have kind of been poisoned with too many carbohydrates. You know, some carbohydrates are fine, but you know, we've been poisoned with them. They've added sugar to everything, and then plus we want the potatoes and the pasta and the bread and the rice, and the sugary drinks. You know, the Cokes and the Pepsis and all that crap. The Mountain Dew, root beer, all that stuff has, you know, it's just sugar water. It's just sugar cubes dissolved up into water with some other additives. You know, and then they carbonate it. So, but it's primarily, the primary ingredient is sugar. So, we've really overloaded our bodies for decades and decades with sugar, and I think I'm going to avoid that. We've overloaded everything with sugar, and then, you know, of course your body is able to compensate. I've watched a ton of YouTube videos about this. Your body's able to compensate. Typically what it does, you eat a bunch of sugar, and it starts spilling into the body, into the bloodstream, and then of course your pancreas instantly reacts by beginning to ramp up or spiking your levels of insulin. And insulin, one of the functions of insulin is a hormone that the body produces. One of the functions of insulin is to push that sugar back down, and it does that by either burning it, telling the body to burn the sugar, or in lieu of that, if it can't burn the sugar, if the muscles can't accept any more sugar, and they can't accept very much, they have like a temporary storage. They can store some of it, but not much. It's kind of like a temporary energy source. And maybe I should have got off there. It's starting to slow now. Oh, well, too late. It can store a little bit, but then, you know, that doesn't take long, and your muscles are sort of full. Maybe your liver as well. And so then the next step, it starts to... it tells the fat cells, hey, you got to store this. So then you start storing it in your fat. You have fat cells. And pretty much you have once you're a certain, a kid, a certain age, you've got pretty much all the fat cells you're ever going to have. They can simply expand or contract as needed. So you start storing fat. And then, of course, if you keep eating carbohydrates, as we all have, continue to eat carbohydrates, and then that continues to cause the body to make more insulin. And over time, that insulin begins, you go over a long period of time, that insulin will begin, many years, it begins to ramp up in an attempt to sort of keep pushing that excess sugar out of your bloodstream. You know, and if the doctor tests your blood and he says, oh, your sugar alert levels are normal, no problem. Have a nice year. Come back next year. Well, in the meantime, they're not testing your insulin levels, and your insulin levels are, on a typical person, are ramping up. And then over time, if you continue that for that kind of behavior for decades, and then before you know it, you start becoming insulin resistant. And when you start that, that's one of the reasons why it has to begin to ramp up, because it's like any drug or any hormone, you get a little bit of it and you have an effect, and then you want more of the effect, and then in order to try to achieve the same effect, it's kind of like the law of diminishing returns, you got to keep ramping it up in order to try to achieve the same effect. Well, at some point, if you continue with that, all of a sudden, then you're... pancreas can't produce enough insulin to deal with the excess sugar, and it begins to spill into your blood, which is bad. Normal blood glucose levels are the equivalent of, let's say, about 5 grams and the average person has a gallon and a half of blood. So 5 grams, that's 1 teaspoon of sugar, or 1 sugar cube, and a gallon and a half, that's not much. Yet the average person, average Americans, eating 31 teaspoons or 31 sugar cubes. Eating all of that in a, per day, 31 teaspoons of sugar a day. And your, the blood level is 1 teaspoon, and you're eating 31 teaspoons. And that's the actual average of what people are eating, you know, kind of the sugar, all of the sugar sort of divided out by the number of people. That's 150 pounds of sugar per person per year in the United States, which is insane. So, what you end up with then, you know, the insulin starts spilling into your bloodstream. Normal level, and I forget the measurement unit, but the normal level can be like from between 85 and 100, whatever the measurement units are, the sugar level in your blood. But once it jumps up, once it gets up to like 140 or so, or it may be a little less than that, but certainly 140, it is actually doing irreparable damage to various parts of your body, including your the little small capillaries in your extremities, in your feet, in your brain, in your organs, and everywhere else. And that's why, one of the reasons why, people begin to lose their vision with diabetes. But type 2 diabetes, one of the so-called complications is that you can go blind, or you lose circulation in your, typically in your toes. It'll maybe start in your toes and then in your feet, and then they, what do? They start amputating. I know a guy that, you know, this guy wasn't overweight either, but this, you know, at least he may have been at some point, I don't know, but, you know, he looked like a fairly thin, tall guy, but he had type 2 diabetes. I didn't know it, but then one day here, he, you know, I asked somebody where he was at, and they said, oh, he's, you know, he had a, had to get his leg amputated, or part of his leg amputated, and then, you know, the next time I saw him, yep, here he was on crutches with, you know, his right leg cut off, I'd say about maybe 5-6 inches below the knee. You know, and then I think the next time I saw him, he had a, you know, he was fitted with an artificial limb, and he was, you know, and then you, of course, with these trousers, you couldn't tell it. And I haven't seen him since then, so I don't know what happened to him. I'm sure he's still around, maybe, hopefully, because the guy's probably about my age or a bit older. But in any case, there's a lot of people, thin or fat, it doesn't really matter, because it happens to thin people too, that are walking around with all of this excess insulin in their bloodstream. And that is a problem. You know, and of course they don't even bother to, they can do insulin tests when you get your blood tested. If you insist to your doctor, there's this kind of a strange reluctance that doctors seem to have about testing insulin. They'll you know, if you insist, they probably will go ahead and do it. It's like a $30 charge, which is really nothing compared to what, you know, if you want it like a, what they call a fasting insulin level, that is well worth it to know that if your insulin level is elevated, because then that's telling you, hey, you've got a problem. You're eating too much sugar. Better cut some of that out of your diet, because that, you know, the complications of diabetes are really nasty before you die. I know people say, well, I want to be happy. I'll die happy. Well, maybe not so much. If you die of all the complications that that happen with diabetes, then have at it, if that's what you want. And it's something that can just be easily eliminated. Just take the excess sugar out of your diet, and then you probably won't have a problem. That's all you got to do is just, just remove the excess sugar. You know, stop eating sugar. That's all I'm doing is just deleting the sugar from my diet. I don't feel deprived. I'm still eating, just as much as I want of other things. And one of the big side benefits is that it's completely eliminated any heartburn. Heartburn is a history. It's gone. No more heartburn. Which is amazing in and of itself. That's a tremendous benefit. You know, it's not really a great idea to be munching on antacid tablets all the time. And then you have these acid reducers such as, like Prilosec, and I don't remember all the names of them. Those are bad if you take those long term, because then your stomach is relying on the acid in order, your body relies on the acid in your stomach in order to be able to absorb the vitamins and minerals from the food. And if it can't, if you've got reduced acid because you live on Nexium or whatever, and you just make sure you're Prilosec, you live on that stuff long-term, then that causes long-term problems, nutritional deficiencies, because the food just sort of ends up passing through you and you're not getting the nutritional benefit out of it that you could otherwise. So it's not a really great idea to be taking all those antacids all the time. So, heartburn's gone. Thing of the past. My digestion's working great. I have very little gas, compared to if I eat a lot of carbohydrates. Guess what? Gas. Out the yin-yang. I've got very little gas. No, digestional issues, no heartburn, and no problem going to the bathroom. Now people are, I'm still eating salad. I like salad. I like vegetables. Vegetables aren't a problem. I eat my share of vegetables and salads. I like those. I know some people don't, but I do. So that's not a problem. Otherwise, all I've done is cut out pasta, potatoes, bread, and rice. And that's it. Just deleted those from my diet. And everything else is the same. So is it a diet? No, I'm not on a diet. I'm just stop the sugar. Stop the sugar cubes. That's what they are. They're sugar cubes. But it is kind of weird. The reaction that I've gotten so far, and I haven't really pushed it very hard, but the reaction that I've gotten so far is I've gotten pushback. And, of course, I expected pushback. The pushback, combined with the pushback that I see other people on, people on YouTube that are getting, the pushback is it's almost like, someone is telling you, you're not worshiping the right God. How dare you not worship this God, the God of sugar? And bad things are going to happen to you because you're not worshiping the God of sugar. You should, and then they'll say, moderation in everything. Well, do you want moderation in cocaine? How about moderation in marijuana? Or moderation in cyanide? Moderation in alcohol, any of the, I don't want it. So I guess, you can drink alcohol if you want to, but, I don't like it. Don't like the taste of it. Never have. So I stay away from it. Don't like the smell of it. Don't like the way it makes people behave. Stay away from it. So what is the point of eating moderate amounts of sugar cubes? Well, I don't think there is a point. I think we've actually eaten extreme amounts of sugar cubes our entire lives, people my age and younger. Younger people have probably eaten more sugar cubes. That's why type 2 diabetes now is starting to show up in kids. young kids. It's shocking. So, you know, there is, you know, there is no moderate amount of, you know, something that tastes good and, you know, sure it tastes good and what have you, and you can eat little bits of it. But when it becomes a big part of your diet, as it is the American diet, and they're, you know, and I don't care how people protest or whatever, it is a big part of the diet. And I think if people could see the, like, how many sugar cubes that they're eating, and instead of whatever it is, the potato or whatever it is that they're eating, if they were actually eating sugar cubes, then they would kind of realize what they were doing. But, or at least some people would. So, you know, but it's almost like someone saying, you better worship this God or else bad things are going to happen to you. When all I've done is just kind of taken sugar out of my diet for the most part. There's still a little bit in there. And in fact, the liver makes some. If you don't eat any sugar at all, you go on one of these so-called carnivore diets, and you eat nothing but meat. There are people that are eating nothing but beef and drinking beef water and salt. And there are people that have done that for years, and they seem to be just fine, and they're getting all the nutrition that they need from the beef, and yet you take their blood sample and there's about 5 grams of sugar, or, you know, it's going to vary a little bit from one person to the next, but there's the equivalent of about 1 teaspoon of sugar in their blood, in their gallon and a half of blood that the average person has. So your liver actually can make some sugar. It makes glucose if it needs it. But of course, we just overload ourselves with it. But it's really kind of like an ideological possession that people have, that they, you know, how dare you not eat the sugar? How dare you not, you know, and it's almost like, you know, like I say, it's like not worshiping their God, you know, and it's really a strange reaction. If you think about it in the right way, it's kind of a strange reaction. So, but all I'm doing is just, you know, I just cut those 4 things out of my diet: pasta, potatoes, rice, and bread. Cut those things out. And, you know, plus, you know, any kind of cakes, cookies, you know, it goes without saying. Cakes, cookies, snacks, snack cakes, all of that crap is gone. None of that. And so that's all I've done, is just cut that part out, and then the rest is the same. So where's the diet? All I've done is cut out the really bad, the bad stuff, which is sugar. I was recently talking to, had a brief conversation with a friend about Brett Kavanaugh, he's on the Supreme Court now, and an abortion vote came up, some sort of an abortion-related vote, and he ended up, instead of being, you know, taking a conservative position and voting, I think, so that the Supreme Court could hear a case, he voted against it. I don't remember, you know, something like that, but in any case, he sided with the liberals. And I was talking to his friend, and he said, well, yeah, what did we get with Brett Kavanaugh? And I think what happened, Brett Kavanaugh, of course, was assaulted psychologically. He was assaulted like no other Supreme Court nominee ever, including Robert Bork. Clarence Thomas, that was pretty serious. Thomas pretty much emerged from that unscathed psychologically, I think, but Kavanaugh maybe not so much. You know, because when you assault someone like that, the key to remaining unscathed is to not resent it, sort of not take it personally. And of course, that's extremely difficult for people to do, even though it's such a simple thing. It's very difficult for people to actually do that. But that's how you remain unscathed. If someone starts berating you and psychologically attacking you, accusing you all kinds of things, and et cetera, then that is, if you resent it, your goose is cooked. And so I think that's what happened to Kavanaugh. And it's even more likely to happen to someone that has lots of college degrees. And especially in the modern age, the main reason, because as people go through the school system, if they do well in the school system, get really good grades and try to please the teachers and the professors, then they're sort of going along with the pressure that the school system applies. And there's a type of it's not just education, there's a real psychological warfare that goes on in school against your individuality that you naturally have. So I experienced that when I was in school, way back in the early, in the 60s, 1960s and early 70s when I was in school. I experienced it, and I didn't have the words to describe it, but it was a real psychological warfare that was happening, and that's exactly what's happening now, even more so. So Kavanaugh's a little bit younger than I am, so he probably received even more of it. And then on top of that, he went to college and probably believed a lot of the stuff they were trying to stuff into his head. And, he was kind of probably educated out of his common sense. But that whole process, because he resented it, you resent pressure, you sort of end up opening your mind to it, and then that's how the psychological warfare is successful. And so that's what's happened to Brett Kavanaugh. It's unfortunate. Now, if it's happened to you, and it's happened to all of us to a certain extent, the way back, kind of out of the psychological warfare, the way back to individuality, to becoming an individual again, is to realize that you resented, kind of really realize what you did and let go of the resentment. But how many people do that? People often hang on to it, and they justify it in all kinds of different ways, and et cetera, et cetera, as I've talked about for years. So that's what happened to Brett Kavanaugh. I think he is a decent guy, but the psychological assault has taken its toll on him. And it can happen to people. What it hasn't happened to is Donald Trump. And it's driving all of the psychological warfare warriors batty, because they've tried everything they possibly can, and it doesn't work on Donald Trump. And when you do that, when you wage psychological war on someone, and they're immune from it, they're immune from your psychological warfare, watch out, because it comes back on you. You end up waging war on yourself. It comes back on the group of people doing, you know, that are performing the psychological warfare. And it drives them insane. And that's what's happened to a lot of people in the country now. They're really insane, even more insane than they were. So, and it serves them right. There's nothing to feel sorry about as far as they go. It's too bad that they, you know, their children have to live with them and sort of suffer the sins of the fathers. Sort of, you know, suffer from the insanity, but that's such is life. So, but that's what happened to Brett Kavanaugh, and so I wouldn't be surprised if he could end up becoming a complete liberal if he's not careful. So, as you could probably tell, that was recorded before my vacation began. I was driving the truck, and as I recall, I think I was actually on my way from Houston. I went from Galveston to the Tulsa, Oklahoma company drop yard, and then the next day after that, after I spent the night there at the drop yard, then I came on home. And then a couple of days after that, I drove my car down to South Texas. I spent 9 nights down there in a motel. And during the daytime, of course, I spent it with my parents, either there at their RV, at the RV park where they're at, or we were... also out kind of driving around and doing things. So ended up going to South Padre Island about 3 different times. That's, if you've never been down there, that's kind of a nice place to go. It is, South Padre Island itself is pretty much a tourist area, but it's still very nice. It's got some very nice beaches on the Gulf of Mexico, as well as some really great food. So, speaking of food, I am still on my low carbohydrate kick, if you want to call it that. And at this point, I think it's going to be a permanent change that I'm making. It's been extraordinarily easy to not eat, you know, to cut out most of the carbohydrates. Some people talk about craving carbohydrates. I'm not. I'm not having a... I haven't had a single issue trying to fight not eating this or eating that or eating a cookie or eating pasta, which would have been my favorite thing of all. I've had zero problem, zero temptation, and at this point, there will be none. So, and I'm getting a little bit of carbohydrate in... salads, because I do like salads. So some vegetables have some limited carbohydrates in them, which is fine. But as far as the other stuff, as far as no potatoes, no pasta, no bread, and no rice, and no desserts, those are all, what are they? They're ego foods, is really what carbohydrates are. They can keep you alive, you know, so I guess if that's all you have to eat, then you can eat them and you'll stay alive, but they're not very good for you, and they do end up having consequences, even though you may not realize it. They are sort of semi-poisonous if you eat very many of them over a long period of time. They do have kind of a poisoning effect on your body, and it causes all kinds of problems over time. And but people, why do people eat those things? It's for ego. Got to have that sweet taste. Yeah, and so it's all about, and then you hear people talk about the things, and you watch their faces as they're eating it. It's all about ego, and so, you know, it's. But if you can give that up, if you can just let go of the carbohydrates, and then one of the other interesting things is with that is that some, you know, kind of, you can make a serious scientific argument that the, you know, we have this, what's called a microbiome or a gut bacteria, you know, and of course, 75% of our immune system, most people don't realize this, 75% of your immune system is in your gut. It's in your intestinal tract. It's in your, you know, it's the part that you, where you're eating and digesting food. 75% of your immune system is in there. So we have these bacteria, which is actually quite a substantial amount of bacteria that live, you know, probably, who knows, maybe in the trillions of bacterial, different microbial cells live in the gut, certainly in the multiple billions of cells that are in communication. They're able to communicate with the, you have a kind of a brain in your gut, because if you, you know, your intestines, your entire digestive system is sort of surrounded by nerve tissue, and that there's enough nerve tissue in your intestinal tract to make up one third of the weight of your brain. So oftentimes it's called the brain and the gut. And that's actually a term, and you can search it on Google or probably YouTube and watch videos about it. But it's really quite fascinating. And I think the idea, you know, we have gut feelings and what have you, that's coming from the brain down in the gut. But the interesting thing is that this so-called microbiome, or these microbes, bacteria, what have you, that help us digest food, also communicate with the gut, or with the nerves in the gut. And those nerves, of course, are connected to your brain. And so you can make a strong case that those bacteria, the microbiome in the gut, helps to control cravings that we may or may not have. So if the makeup of the, you know, and of course the makeup of the microbiome, the gut bacteria, the makeup of them, because there's different types of them, is determined sort of by what you've been eating. And of course, what you've been eating is what you're going to end up craving. So if you change what you've been eating, you kind of switch from eating a lot of carbohydrates to eating, you know, kind of deleting most of the carbohydrates and just kind of concentrating on what's left, what remains. And of course, what remains is proteins and fats, you know, and you get a little bit of carbohydrates and some vegetables, a varying amount, but then you have, you know, some, you know, the so-called roughage, you know, and this present in various fiber, I guess is another term for it, this present in various, you know, vegetables or what have you. So, and greens. So, once you make that change, then the bacteria in your stomach also changes, and it kind of ends up changing, I think it probably ends up changing cravings. So, but I find that I cannot overeat with, you know, if I, you know, having taken the carbohydrates out of the picture, the major offenders, having taken all of those out of the picture, when I eat, I find that I can eat a certain amount and then that's it. And I would have a really hard time continuing to eat beyond that point. Whereas with carbohydrates, there seems to be no natural limiting factor. You can just eat them and eat them and eat them until you burst. And in a sense, you do, because you bloat, and then you end up with acid reflux, indigestion, the stomach acid kind of boiling up the esophagus. You know, it boils up in kind of the backside of the esophagus. You know, God forbid you're in bed, and it's happened to me a couple of times over the years where I was in bed asleep, and the stuff kind of, you know, because your stomach has a little, sort of a little sphincter, or it's like you can think of it as a little door that sort of opens and closes. So when you swallow something, it opens up and it lets it drop into the stomach, but then it immediately closes back up. But if you've got all this bloating that's happening because you pigged out on carbohydrates, then that sphincter can't stay closed because there's pressure against it, I suppose. And so it can't stay closed, and it lets the stuff come back up towards your esophagus. You know, and of course the esophagus is the other end of the tube. And that's, you know, where you swallow at. And so you have that stuff come up. I've had it happen to me a couple of times where it actually came up in my throat and I was in danger of choking on it. And it woke me up. And, you know, because you get this really burning acid in your throat. And, of course, the stomach carries a quantity of very strong hydrochloric acid as part of the digestive process. So, you know, your stomach does have acid, and it should have. You need the acid. You know, and it's a really bad idea to live on, as I was. I was kind of living on these, the Tums or whatever, and different acid tablets. Bad idea. Because that creates all kinds of other problems if you do it over a long period of time. You need the stomach acid, but it needs to stay where it's supposed to be, in the stomach. If everything's fine, then it's in the stomach, and your stomach walls are protected by mucus, and everything's hunky-dory. And your digestive system simply works as you want it to. But, you know, with the carbohydrates, it causes all kinds of trouble. Not only in the stomach, but then also down in the rest of the intestinal tract. Because then you get, in a lot of cases people have, and I'm sure I did, to varying degrees, sort of irritated bowel. You know, they call it IBS, or irritated bowel syndrome, and I'm sure I had some. You know, I never was diagnosed with it, but I'm sure I had it to a certain extent, kind of depending on what I ate. Since, I've kind of been on this very low carbohydrate thing for a little over a month now, I'm having very few digestive issues. I'm also finding I had a little bit of a, it's been going on for a number of years, sort of an allergic reaction to dry skin is what it ended up, it turned out to be. It was an allergic reaction to dry skin on my lower legs and then the heels of my feet. And I went to the doctor and I got some steroid cream to apply to it that would kind of suppress the inflammation. But it never really cured it. I could just kind of suppress the inflammation and then wait a while, and then, you know, wait, you know, of course, in the meantime, I would apply, like Cetaphil, the skin moisturizer, other types of moisturizers in order to prevent the, especially on my lower legs, it would sort of, whenever I would take a shower, I would apply that, and then that would prevent the allergic reaction on my legs, lower legs, but I never really could get rid of the, kind of the inflamed area, especially on my right heel, it just wouldn't stop. Well, in the past month, that is slowly getting better to the point, you know, because I could lay down before this, I could lay down on my back, flat on my back, you know, and of course, if you're laying flat on your back and your heels are, you know, everything's just flat on your back, you know, your heels are sort of, or at least my heels kind of poke down, or they're laying on whatever the mattress surface is, and I would have to put my heel, especially the right heel, on something soft, otherwise I could feel it throbbing, you know, and it was quite noticeable. It was because it was inflamed, and you can actually look at it, and it was red, inflamed, and it was just an inflammation reaction, an inflammatory reaction to the dry skin thing that was going on just on the heel. And it was sort of a, once it got going, then it really got inflamed, and then the whole thing sort of fed on itself. Now, it's possible that if I would have been putting moisturizer on it the whole time, that it might not have ever happened, but it's going away. Now, why is it going away? I haven't put any medicine on it for more than the past month. It was since the last time I did that. And yet somehow it's getting better. Now, why? The only thing I've changed is I've gotten rid of the carbohydrates. Now, you could say, well, it's some other reason or whatever, but in my mind, it's pretty, you know, there's sort of a reaction. And that's just one of the reactions, is that it slowly, it has improved to the point where I almost don't feel any throbbing at all. And it's looking a whole lot better. Now, I'm still applying the moisturizer to it, of course, every day, and I will. I'll continue to do that for the time being anyway. And the only time I really have to worry about it is when I, especially lower legs, have to take a shower. So, you know, whenever I take a shower and get legs wet, then I make sure that I, once I dry off, I apply the Cetaphil to it or something. You know, I've got... what I had, this other stuff, this aloe vera stuff that seems pretty good. It was a little greasy, but it works pretty well. So either one of those, and that seems to work. The other benefit that I've, this makes this all worthwhile, cutting out the carbohydrates, is that I've had absolutely, really zero acid reflux, zero indigestion. It's gone. I ate a large, you know, a relatively large lunch a while ago. Right now I'm still at home. I'm going back to work today. They gave me a load to pick up in Russellville, Arkansas, but it doesn't, you know, it's not going to be ready to load until about 7 p.m., so there's no point in me getting there too early, because it's, what is it from here to Russellville, maybe a bit over 100 miles, something like that. So I'll leave here maybe by around, let's say 4:30, 5 o'clock, and then that'll allow me time to get down there, and then I can pick the load up and do whatever I have to do. So in the meantime, you know, so I'm here and I'm kind of waiting. But in any case, I went down to the... there's a Mexican restaurant in West Fork called Chihuahua, and so I went down there, and they actually have, it's kind of surprising, that's one of the better Mexican restaurants around West Fork, or, you know, the whole Northwest Arkansas area, is that one in West Fork, of all places. It's been there for a few years now. And so I ordered these, what is it, poblano fajitas, you know, so you have the poblano peppers, fried onions, there's some tomato in there, then they add cheese, and then you can either have steak or chicken, and this time I got steak. And so that's all I had. I you know, and plus I had they give you a little plate of some lettuce, and then the cilantro, which is kind of like spicy little chunks of like celery and tomato, and then you have guacamole and sour cream. And so I got that, and then the main fajita thing, it's one of those deals that they bring it, and it's kind of sizzling on the plate, that they, you know, it's kind of the pan that they cook it in type thing that they bring to the table. It's hot, of course, and it has a pot holder. So, but I, you know, no tortillas, no chips, no salsa, no rice, no beans. All that is out. But still, there was enough food there where, you know, plus a couple of glasses of iced tea to wash it all down with. Enough food there. I really didn't feel like I could eat, you know, I could really, that was just enough. And I really didn't feel like I could eat another bite. And I won't probably for, it's probably going to be 6-7 o'clock maybe, or, you know, depending. It's going to be later before I do it. I may go ahead and eat before I go into place where I'm going to pick the load up. Now, because I don't know if it's a drop and hook or if it's a live load. It could be a drop and hook, or it could go either way. Find out when I get there. So it's probably going to be a drop and hook, but let's hope for that. But might not be. But, so anyway, no more indigestion, no more acid reflux. It's gone. Not a problem anymore. Now, the other thing, you know, since I've, you know, been around scales, here at home, and when I was down visiting my parents, they had some scales. Well, down there it didn't matter so much because I was with all my clothes on. But here at home, I've been weighing, like in the morning once I get out of bed, go ahead and weigh with no clothes on. Or just, let's say, with underwear and socks or whatever on, which doesn't weigh much. Well, so before I started this a little over when I was home the very last time, before, you know, and then I came home again, and then that's when my vacation started. But whenever, you know, let's say at the beginning of December, I, without any clothes on, I weighed 185 point something pounds, according to, I didn't write it down, but it was 185.4 or 0.6 or something like that. And so, of course, your weight will actually vary during the day or whatever. You know, it can go up or down. You know, it can go up 2 or 3 pounds depending on what you've eaten and how much you've drank. And then when you went to the bathroom, depends on what you've done. But generally, you could weigh, you know, without obsessing over it, maybe, you know, sometimes they'll suggest weigh once a week, or if you're really trying to lose weight, or it's probably not a good idea to weigh every day, but because it's going to fluctuate. But in any case, this morning, and of course my weight has fluctuated, but this morning it's fluctuated the lowest it's ever, you know, it's been in a long, long time. It was when I got on the scale this morning, it was 171.0. You know, and I started out at 186 point whatever, 4 or 6, whatever it was. So it's definitely gone down, and the trend is downward, even if it, because there's been a day or two where it said 172.4 or whatever. So it's, like I say, it varies by, at least with me, it'll vary about 3 pounds. But it's the lower variance number is just continuing to slowly drop, which is fine. You don't want to lose weight too quick. Not a good idea. You want to do it slowly so that you know, your body has time to, all of the systems have time to adjust to the weight loss and to the change. The other thing that I'm noticing, and it just may be, it could well be just power of suggestion, but it seems like, you know, because I heard it, I've seen this, people repeat this in different videos about people on, you know, kind of a ketogenic diet or low carbohydrate diet. They will say that, you know, it, after they've been on it for a while that it's they can think more clearly. And I think there might be something to that. Now, again, it just may be the power of suggestion, but it seems to me that I'm able to kind of think more clearly. Now, who knows if that's true or not, but it seems to me that it is. So who knows? But your body is perfectly capable of running on fats. It doesn't have to have the carbohydrates. The little carbohydrate that the body needs, is it's able to manufacture. Your liver is perfectly capable of manufacturing the 5 grams of sugar that's present in your average 1.5 gallons of blood that's in your body. You've got 1 teaspoon of sugar floating around, and that your liver is perfectly capable of manufacturing it. And yet, here we are, the average person is eating 31 teaspoons of sugar a day. Now, how in the world can you justify eating 31 teaspoons of sugar a day? And that's an actual average. So some people are really eating more than that much. It's insane. Half of the people are diabetic, or they're threatened with it. Probably even more, maybe 2/3, if you really look at the... Depends on how you define type 2 diabetes, but, the diabetes just doesn't simply happen one day. You're on a long road, and the road can go on for decades before the real symptoms really strike, depending on what they're measuring. They should be measuring insulin levels. Instead of just saying, oh, your blood level's normal, you got 5 grams of sugar in your blood, that's normal. Instead of saying that, they should be measuring your insulin levels. How high are your insulin levels? Because over a long period of time, it may go on for decades, as I say, your insulin level just keeps going up and up and up and up and up. And in order to kind of keep that blood level pushed down to 5 grams... So, and then at some point, the body can't do it anymore. It just fails. So far, so good. Like I say, my weight is kind of going down. That's not really why I started this. I started it because after watching all those videos, after finding out that my middle brother was type 2 diabetic on metformin is actually the better, probably the actual way it's pronounced, metformin. There's no A in there. It's not like meta. It's met. So, metformin. But a lot of people do tend to mispronounce that. Since I found that out and I watched all those videos, then that kind of tipped the scale and made me realize, hey, there is a problem with all this. And it's not, well, I'll just eat a snack once in a while, because that's kind of what I've thought for a long time. I just eat the snack. But in the meantime, I was still eating pasta every day and all of the breads and sometimes potatoes and sometimes rice. All that's gone. Cut all that stuff out. Don't need it. It really is, get this into your head, it really is eating sugar cubes. You're just eating sugar cubes. Sorry. If you've got a bowl of pasta, it's sugar cubes. If you've got a baked potato, you've got the equivalent amount of sugar cubes. If you've got your thing of rice, you got the equivalent amount of sugar cubes, whatever the amount is. Or bread, sugar cubes. You're eating sugar cubes. Sorry. Why would you eat, let's say you have a steak and what have you, and maybe your vegetables and your salad, and then you have your little side of sugar cubes, that's what you're really doing. Or if you got your horrible sweet and pre-sweetened tea, eat a mound of sugar cubes. And that's really what it metabolizes into. And so it's, even if you have, fruit is healthy, we'll have this banana. Well, you're eating sugar cubes, sorry. And I noticed some people that it kind of bothers. They don't really say. I haven't had anybody say anything. You know, but you know, when I've been around people and I've been kind of talking to a, let's say, a specific person about, you know, this kind of thing about not eating, deciding not to eat carbohydrates. Sometimes there'll be people kind of that overhear, and they won't say anything, but you can kind of tell that they really. It's like the carbohydrates. They're sort of. It's not just food. They're not just hungry. It's something beyond that. It's almost like it's saving them somehow. It's really a weird relationship that people do have with, and it's really carbohydrates. For years I've said everybody has, to varying degrees, everybody has a food problem, but it really is a carbohydrate problem, because you can't eat too many. If I put a bunch of steak in front of you, you know, just imagine the most delicious steak that you can, and you have that in front of you, and you can eat as much of it as you possibly want. How much are you going to be able to eat? Are you going to be able to eat a pound of it? Are you going to be able to eat 2 pounds of it? At some point, your brain is going to say, that's it, can't eat anymore, sorry. And you really have to struggle. You might be able to take some more bites, but you're going to have to really struggle to do it. And that's true of fats. It's true of protein. But when you get to carbohydrates, you can just eat and eat and eat and eat, and nothing ever tells you to quit. You can eat the whole half gallon of ice cream. You can eat the whole bag of potato chips. You can eat, you know, which you should never eat. They're horrible. Or you can eat the whole bag of Cheetos, same thing. That's just, you're eating poison. It's even, you know, it's even worse than a stupid baked potato or whatever. It's poison. Or you drink your liquid candy in the form of a soft drink. It's just, you're poisoning yourself. You're poisoning your body to please your stupid ego. You know, and if you keep, anybody that keeps doing that kind of deserves what they end up with, and what they, you know, inevitably what most people are going to end up with is not very pretty, you know, because you end up with type 2 diabetes, and keep eating the carbohydrates as the doctor tells you, you need to lose weight, and of course you just gain weight because you're stupidly eating carbohydrates, you continue with that. And you keep, try to go on your little starvation diet where you're still eating carbohydrates, you know, and but you're trying to eat fewer calories. Well, that usually, those diets always fail. In the long term, they always fail. You need to change your eating habits, you know, you cut out the poison, and you won't be so damn fat. The fat slowly goes away, your body gets better. And as I said before, the body is perfectly capable of and actually prefers on running on the fats, because that's your body's long-term storage mechanism. It stores energy as fat in the fat cells. That's why you have fat cells. Of course, we end up kind of stuffing them full. We sort of abuse them with all the carbohydrates. So, you know, get rid of the carbohydrates. You get rid of your problem, and if you actually get successfully rid of the carbohydrates, you know, and don't go back to them, there really is no, you're not going to regain the weight. But you have to really do realize that those things are poison. And, you know, it's easy to think that, it's super easy to rationalize taking your poison. It really is. But at the same time, you really do, even if you can rationalize it away, you really do need to realize that it is, in fact, poison. So anyway, before this goes on too long, by the way, I'm recording this on my Zoom H2N recorder, so it's probably not going to sound quite the same as the Heil PR40 microphone, but I didn't go out to the truck and get it. It's out in the truck, so just use this one instead. So, but anyway, I've got a little fairly short file from Joel that he sent back on December 19. So we'll go ahead and play that now. So here is Joel.
Hello, Tom. Joel McLaughlin here. Life in Ohio vlog, mostly. This week, I'm in California or California, however you want to say it. I'm actually near San Diego, and I'm here doing work for a client. Sitting in the hotel room now, getting ready to go out and grab some dinner. This week I've actually been posting a lot of videos on the Life in Ohio channel. Doesn't make sense to be Life in Ohio since I'm in California, but whatever, it's my vlog and it's all about me. Anyway, but the interesting thing I'm doing here is I've got my drone and I've got a DJI Osmo Mobile 2, which is a gimbal for your cell phone, and using both my Pixel 2 XL as well as the Mavic to create the vlogs, release the recordings, and then I added them with an app called CyberLink PowerDirector, and it's by the same folks who used to do the DVD software and make Blu-ray software if you watch Blu-rays on a laptop. So it does a really good job. Really kind of impressed with how I'm able to throw things together. There's certain things I'm not happy with in it. Like I can't figure out how in the app if I can do auto ducking. Like I like to have background music in some of my vlogs. And the only way I've figured out to really make it work is to clip out the section where I'm talking and then just lower the whole volume for the track. It's a little bit disjointed. Going from where it's loud to soft when I'm talking. But when I work on it in Premiere Pro, I can actually, the latest version of Premiere Pro, you can select which video track is or audio tracks are the dialogue and which are the backing music, and then you can have it automatically put in the ducking points in Premiere, so that way you can hear the voice over the music, which is pretty spiffy. So, but anyway, it's comfortable here. I'm wearing shorts, although it's probably a little cool for some people for shorts, but not for me. I'm hot-blooded. So anyway, I thought I'd send you a little voice message, tell you Merry Christmas. I see you're enjoying cooking at home. Looks like you're home for the holidays. So I should be heading home Friday, all day Friday. It'll probably be a travel day for me. So talk to you later. See you. Bye.
Okay, so thank you, Joel. Merry Christmas to you, sort of belated, and I guess Happy New Year to everybody. So, there's been a lot that I've been doing the past few weeks, and even since I got home... Sunday, I drove back from South Texas. I did it kind of all in one gulp. It was it's about 860 miles, give or take a few miles, from here to there. And so, but I did that all kind of in one gulp. Got up early Sunday morning and did that. But so I've been home since then. So I've been home Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and then of course today is Friday, and I go back to work today. So, one of the things I did, I guess I may or may not have known these things existed, but there's this, you can go to like Walmart and buy these, it's like a memory foam type mattress topper. And my parents, where I kind of ran into it, my parents had one on the bed they have down there in their RV, and they were just raving about how good it was. And, you know, it's really a, because it makes it, it doesn't really, you know, you can say, well, it makes the bed a little softer, but what it really does is it helps to take away pressure points. You know, because your bed's going to be, maybe it's going to be, depends on your mattress, if the mattress is, how hard the mattress is. But what this does, and even if you have a pillow top mattress, unless you've got a, you know, your whole mattress is a memory foam mattress, this just sort of, you know, the, I got the 3-inch version. I guess there's also a 4-inch version. So I got one of those for here at home, and, you know, I've slept on it, I don't know, 2 or 3 nights now, and I'm pretty impressed with it. It really seems to make a giant difference as far as getting rid of pressure points. It's kind of, that's one of the things I liked about a waterbed, is it gets rid of pressure points, but then the waterbed, at least for me, has way too other, too many other downsides. They can, you know, the big, you know, they're just bad. I've talked about them before, but they've got their downsides, and I wouldn't, you know, wouldn't mess with one again. But I got that, and you know, for a queen size bed, just which I have in my bedroom, it's about $120 roughly. And so I, after the first night, I decided I liked it so well that I actually went back to Walmart and got one to take with me in the truck. Up until this point, I've just used those sort of cheap foam eggshells. I had 3 of them, and of course, over time, they sort of deteriorate and they'll start tearing and what have you. And it would take at least 3 of them to kind of soften the bed up. And then they have a bad habit of sliding around. You bump down the road and they'll just sort of slide around. And that's not helped by the fact that Crete uses plastic mattresses. They're sort of really super durable and they're very firm. But they are no fun to sleep on, I can tell you that. If you've ever had the experience of trying to sleep, even if you've got a sheet that you put over a plastic mattress, it's a weird experience. So what I would do, I had the 3 foam eggshell things, twin-sized, and then the sleeping, I got this big, thick sleeping bag on top of that, and that's what I would sleep on. So I got, discarded, you know, that you can get the foam 3-inch memory foam gel whatever thing for twin size, is which fits right perfectly in the truck, which is those were like $69 something, I think it's just under $70 for one of those. And so I got one and got it in the truck and got rid of the foam eggshell things, and so that should work out really well, because I, like I say, I really enjoy the one on the on my bed here at home. So no doubt I'm going to have a similar kind of an experience with the thing there in the truck. Because those foam eggshell things, you know, they would slide around over, you know, get on a bumpy road, and periodically I'd have to take everything apart and put it all back together again because they would wrinkle. You know, they get this big wrinkle in them, and in one or more of the layers, and then you're trying to lay on that, and it's no, you know, it's kind of a big distraction if that wrinkle is kind of right in the middle of your back. So, so rid of that, so pretty happy with that. Another thing that I did was, you know, I've had the Apple routers for, 2 Apple routers for a long time, and I, you know, I used those Apple routers to create my home Wi-Fi network. Well, I ended up getting, and I got them at Best Buy, Eero, E-E-R-O, like a routing Wi-Fi system. The one that I got was like 3. It was the more expensive one, Generation 2. It's the more expensive version of it, where you've got Ethernet ports out. So there's 3 of these things, and they're just unbelievably simple to set up. You use the app on your mobile device. I installed the Eero app on my phone, and I, you know, you just follow the instructions, and you can have a network set up in, you know, just minutes. It's pretty amazing. So, and when you're doing that, you know, because one of the things that, that I'd thought about doing this before, but then I thought, well, it's, you know, it's going to be a giant pain in the rear because I've got all of these devices on my home network, you know, depending on, you know, there's always at least 12 things that are on the network, typically. When I'm not even home, there's, you know, there's probably 12 things that are on the network, and then more depending on what gets turned on or off. So when I'm here, so yeah, I thought that'd be a giant pain in the rear, set up a new network and then have to put the, you know, put the credentials into each one of them. Well, there's, you know, it's kind of a simple way, and I don't know why more people don't do it. You just use the same SSID or network name and the same password that you had on your old, so like, you know, I had, you know, an Apple network, and I just used the default name. It was like Apple network, and then a series of letters and numbers that were 5 or 6 digits long. Well, I simply duplicated that as the name for the Eero network, the network that the Eeros were going to create after, of course, I'd already turned off the Apple routers, unplugged them, you know, moved them out. And so I've named it the same name. It's Apple network, whatever combination of letters and numbers, and then with the same password. And so they have you set up the first unit, the one that's the one that plugs into your modem. And then they'll tell you, know, you've done that successfully. Then they say, now you can move on to number 2 and set it. You know, you want to have it within 40 feet, preferably within line of sight. If you can do that, that's better than if you could do it within line of sight, of course, as opposed to going through walls, because that really wreaks havoc with Wi-Fi. But it's not always possible, obviously. So set that one up, and then number 3, set that one up. And I ended up moving the third one. I ended up kind of moving it to a, you know, changing the location that I thought was a little bit more optimal. But it's super, super easy to get those things all up and running. And then the other thing that I ended up doing was, because when you install it, what they suggest doing is, like with your modem, because most of these modems, if it's a DSL modem or a cable company modem or whatever, they have a router built in. Now, the way I always set mine up, because I have these cameras, these IP cameras in particular, that need to be accessed from outside my network, I set that up as the router. That's the DHCP server. The phone company router modem is the DHCP server, and then set the Wi-Fi, because if normally you'd go to, you know, like double network address translation or double NAT, and you really don't want to do that. What you want to, or, you know, in my case, because then it works, most of the devices work, except can't access from the cameras from the outside world. So it's easier the way I had the Apple routers set up, and then the same way that I've done with this Eero to create the Wi-Fi network is to put the Eero, same as I did with the Apple, in what's called bridge mode. And then that allows, because you can only, you know, that allows the DHCP server to be on the phone company modem router/router, and so it's doing the DHCP server, it's doing the network address translation and the, you know, the ports forwarding that needs to happen from, so that I can access my cameras from the outside world. You have to have port forwarding that happens, and so otherwise, and that kind of goes through the firewall of the router. And then the other, the Eero router, or the Eero devices, are simply creating a really powerful, strong network kind of in and around my house that's even more powerful and robust than the Apple routers did. So, but now one thing that I've noticed with the Eero routers is that there are a few little differences, But one of the things that I've noticed, of course, I have a slow DSL connection. You know, it's pretty slow by modern standards. It's only like, depending on the time of day and how many people are using it, it can be anywhere from as good as 1.2 megabits down to 0.3 up. Or more recently, it's been like 0.8, 0.9 megabits down. It's not even a megabit down, and it's still about 3 or 0.3 or 0.4 megabits up. So it's pretty slow. By, you know, like I say, it's a lot faster than dial-up, but it's pretty slow by modern internet service standards. So until, you know, until I'm able to get fiber from my electric company, hopefully sometime within the next 2 or 3 years, until I'm able to do that, then I'm kind of stuck with it. But the thing I noticed with the Eero routers, watching a service like Netflix or YouTube, I'm really impressed with the quality of the picture streaming that it's able to sort of extract from the slow internet, you know, and it's even better than what the Apple could do. And I don't know, it's the same modem, but somehow these Eero routers are, or these Eero devices are able to end up with, they sure seem to end up with a better looking stream video, which that's kind of interesting if that could happen. But I could see how, how that can happen, because people do talk about differences between, that are actually testing these routers on their own home networks, you know, kind of do it seriously. So, it's kind of interesting how that it is giving me some better streaming results than I was getting before. So, you know, even in the cases where it is line of sight from, you know, or, well, it's not, no, it's not. It's not line of sight, sorry. Well, actually, in one case it is, but even if it's not line of sight, it's still giving some pretty good results. Better than what I was getting with the Apple routers. So it's kind of interesting. So anyway, they're not cheap. They were originally $4.99, and Best Buy had them for around, roughly $4.50. That's pretty much for, you know, it's still kind of expensive for a Wi-Fi router system, but like I say, this is super, super easy to set up, and it's just quick and painless, and it works pretty good. So, did that. I'm trying to think if I did anything else. I'm sure I did, but now I'm not, if I have, it slipped my mind, and if it's important, I'll think of it later, but do need to go ahead and wrap this up. So, Joel, thank you for the comment. Hope everyone has had a great holiday season, Christmas and New Year's. Hope you're having a great, or you've had a great week. Tomorrow the weekend starts. Hope you have a great weekend, and I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.